Welcome to PwC's CFO Direct podcast series. I'm Heather Horn, a partner in our national office, and I'll be your host today. Today's podcast will cover a topic that's prominently in the news, Brexit. Brexit refers to Britain's exit from the European Union as a result of a referendum that was held in 2016. Unless it's delayed, Britain's exit is planned to occur on March 29th, and it's quite complicated because right now there's no agreement as to how that exit's going to work, and that leads to a lot of uncertainty from a business perspective. So our podcast today is going to focus on accounting and reporting implications of Brexit, and in particular, we're going to focus on the top five things you need to know as you think about your accounting and disclosure. And those are non-financial asset impairments, financial asset impairments, restructuring, tax accounting implications, and disclosure implications. Joining me for today's discussion are Chip Curry and Matt Sabatini, both partners in our national office, and Cassie Bauman, a managing director who's also in our national office. And the three of them have all been working with our engagement teams and clients, working on complex accounting issues, including Brexit. So as we focus on the top five things that companies need to think about as they're considering the accounting and reporting implications for Brexit, the first thing that comes to mind is items related to the valuation of assets. So Matt, can you kick us off by taking us through what companies should be considering related to the valuation of non-financial assets, including perhaps goodwill and intangibles?
Thanks, Heather. Yes, yeah, so when we think about valuation of non-financial assets in the context of Brexit, I think there are two things that pop into my head. The first is about trigger events. So when you're thinking about goodwill and long-lived intangible assets, generally it's an annual impairment test, but there are additional trigger events that might cause you to want to reevaluate your carrying value of these assets, right? So there's guidance in the codification, and there's guidance from the SEC about what those trigger events might be. Some of them include changes in the macroeconomic environment, situations where you might see significant cost increases. What I will say is that as of year-end, for calendar year-end companies, it's not likely that there's a trigger event yet, but what you should keep in mind is that significant uncertainty in the economy, significant uncertainty in cash flows, will lead to a situation where valuations can change. So while you might not have an obvious trigger yet, it's something to keep an eye on as March 29th comes closer. Same goes for long-lived assets. I think long-lived assets is more of a recoverability test than a fair value test, but it's going to, you know, it relies on coming up with various cash flow scenarios. And as, again, uncertainty enters into the marketplace, your cash flow scenarios are going to need to reflect that uncertainty. So trigger event, something to keep in mind, right? Might not have happened yet, but might be something that happens shortly. On the valuation side, I already mentioned cash flow projections, right? So again, more uncertainty in your supply chain, more uncertainty in your regulatory environment, more uncertainty around liquidity and working capital. If you have a significant operation in Britain or an investment in a company that has significant operations in Britain, you're going to want to think about how your cash flow projections bear out all of this uncertainty. It may result in a wider range of scenarios that think about different possible exits, right? There's no plan in place. We're not sure what that plan is going to look like if it does come into place. The other thing to think about is discount rates. So there's going to be an impact on thinking about British country risk, British currency risk, and all of that plays into your discount rates. Important not to double count if you're taking risk into account in the cash flow projections. You don't also want to reflect that in the discount rate. But those are the things that I'm thinking through when I'm thinking about how Brexit could impact valuation.
And when we're talking about these valuation considerations and what assets we should be looking at, what assets are we talking about? Is it just assets that are located in Britain? Is it assets located someplace else? What type of assets could be implicated?
So, yeah, great question. I mean, I think that biggest risk is going to be assets that are located in Britain, because I think that's where the most uncertainty is going to come. And it's around property, plant, and equipment, or if you have intangibles like IP that are kind of situated in a legal entity within Britain, that's what I think probably has the highest risk, but that's not all you need to think about, right? So assets that are within the EU are now going to have an unclear kind of trading scenario with their Great Britain counterparts. So this could have an impact on EU more broadly. And then assets in the U.S., probably less of a risk, but also something you want to think about in terms of, is there a situation where there's heavy reliance on a supply chain or a supplier in Great Britain? Because there could be disruptions, there could be increased tariffs or custom duties or delayed shipments, which really could impact your operations.
Okay, so it's really looking at your contractual relationships and other relationships to consider, are you going in or out of Britain some place in the supply chain? And then that's what you should be thinking about.
And then there's one other sleeper issue. If Brexit, actual March 29th, is your trigger event date, and you do decide you need to test goodwill for impairment as of that date, if you were thinking about early adopting the new goodwill standard next year during 2019, you need to apply that new standard and that new test as of the trigger date. You can't wait for your annual impairment test. If you had tested goodwill as of March 29th using the old rules, then you're kind of stuck using the old rules for all of 2019.
Oh, so you will not be permitted to early adopt if you use the old rules on March 29th.
Okay.
Helpful. Very helpful to point that out to our listeners. Thank you. So then let's move on to a related topic, which would be valuation of financial assets. So Chip, this would include things like hedging and other types of financial assets. Would we expect Brexit or the impending impact of Brexit to have an impact on those types of assets?
Well, I think from a valuation perspective, a lot of the things that Matt talked about are relevant, not just to non-financial assets, but financial assets as well. From an accounting model perspective, the way financial assets impact P&L can be different than non-financial assets. So, for example, if you have instruments that are being measured at fair value with changes in fair value reported in earnings, so think derivatives, think equity investments after the adoption of the new standard, any change in fair value obviously have an immediate impact on earnings. If there's significant increases in the credit risk of assets or decreases in the valuation of the assets, that can also cause impairments on instruments that are not being measured at fair value through P&L on a current basis. So think available for sale securities, think loans, and potentially even leases. Changing gears a little bit from a hedge accounting perspective, you know, the valuation impacts can kind of spill over to hedge accounting. So to the extent that a value of a derivative instrument is impacted, that could impact whether or not hedging relationships are highly effective, and therefore if they're not, we would have to stop hedge accounting, or it could increase the amount of ineffectiveness, and that could have an impact on P&L. You know, sticking with the derivative standard for a minute, one other area you could impact hedge accounting is to the extent that you have cash flow hedges of forecasted transactions. And you know, Matt talked a little bit about interruptions in the supply chain and things like that. So to the extent that Brexit has an impact on the probability of whether transactions you're hedging under the cash flow model are going to happen, that can have implications on hedge accounting. We might even have to stop hedge accounting, or in some cases, amounts that were deferred in other comprehensive income, we might have to flush those through P&L. Yeah, and the last thing I would point out, probably from a derivative perspective, again, sticking with the theme of supply chain issues and things like that, is sometimes companies will have agreements and they'll be applying the normal purchase, normal sale scope exception from the derivative guidance. And again, to the extent that the contracts may not result in delivery, that could have an impact on whether or not a contract continues to qualify for that scope exception.
So Chip, I guess a couple follow-up questions. First, on hedge accounting, I guess normal as well, are we starting to see people already assessing the impact, or is this like a Q1 type of evaluation that is once Brexit occurs, given the amount of uncertainty that we're seeing now, that then you would be assessing, is your hedge still effective, is forecasted transactions still going to occur? What do we think from a timeline perspective?
Well, the requirement to assess the probability of transaction is an ongoing requirement. So clearly people are assessing that as part of their fourth quarter. They did it kind of at the beginning of the quarter when they were thinking about like their prospective hedging. And they're also thinking about it now as they look from a retrospective perspective. And obviously their views and perspectives may change as we get additional information, in 2019.
Yeah, given all the uncertainty. Okay, so Chip, then the other question, you also mentioned OCI. Can you just remind people of that accounting model that you apply for things that are hung up in OCI, particularly if there's valuation issues?
Yeah, sure. So the way the cash flow hedge model works is in order to get hedge accounting for future cash flows, you have to be able to demonstrate that those cash flows are probable of occurring. The minute it becomes less than probable, what we do is we stop hedge accounting. However, amounts that were deferred in other comprehensive income, they would stay there. Once a transaction becomes probable of not occurring, then at that point, any amounts that are recorded in other comprehensive income would have to be flushed out of other comprehensive into current earnings.
Okay, so two steps, basically, companies need to think about.
Absolutely.
Good, thank you. So then let's switch gears a little bit. I think, you know, you talked about companies that are operating in Britain or that have significant operations that are interacting with companies in Britain. And I think given some of the uncertainty, some of those companies may be thinking about restructuring. And so, Matt, do you have any reminders that you can give companies that are in that position?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's interesting. I read an article the other day that north of $1 trillion of assets has already moved out of Great Britain. Most of them financial assets, the kind that Chip was talking about earlier. But it's not, you know, that far along until we see some operating assets moving as well. So yeah, companies are definitely considering restructuring operations. That might include the cancellation of certain contracts, leases, or licensing arrangements or other third-party contracts. So it's important to think through kind of the accounting model for these types of restructuring or exit costs. And I think as of year-end, again, for calendar year-end companies, it's likely that you won't have a recognition event yet, right? Because it's likely that most companies haven't really formalized their plans of restructuring or exit because there's no, again, hard plan for what's going to happen on March 29th. But it's certainly something to keep an eye on in the first quarter and certainly after March 29th. That doesn't mean that there shouldn't be good disclosure around what's going on and what the potential impacts are related to these potential events. And again, the impact could be on cash flows, like we talked about earlier. One other thing I think companies are already underway is thinking about legal reorganizations, either for regulatory purposes or maybe for tax purposes, and thinking about how their legal structure is going to be amended because of Brexit. So something to think about in terms of transfer pricing, in terms of potentially the way the business is even going to be managed post-Brexit. And the reason I really bring that up for financial reporting is if you think about segments and the way reporting units are defined, it's really on a management approach. So if the way the business is being managed changes and then the chief operating decision maker package changes along with it, you really need to rethink how you're disclosing segments. So, you know, one example.
So a hidden issue yeah. inside of my restructuring question.
Possibly, yeah. I took it to segments.
Yeah.
But if you think about a company that does geographics reporting segments and they have a Europe reporting segment, is that a situation now where the package is going to change and you might break it up into a Britain, Europe, and rest of the world, right? And then the follow-on impact on that in terms of reporting units and how that might impact aggregation. Does the risk profile change around Britain versus the rest of Europe?
Right. Okay, helpful. One question just to clarify. So if you are in a situation where you're either contemplating a restructuring or you have made a decision to restructure, what is the point where you move from disclosure to accounting for that?
Right. So there's a series of criteria that you have to meet. I think the most important one in terms of being at the point where you can recognize a liability is that the plan has already been approved. And that's where I think we might fall short at year end, right? Because I think there's still a lot of uncertainty around what companies are going to do. But that's certainly the most important one. I think, you know, the others include having announced the plan to the kind of impacted employees.
Okay. So then companies in this situation should be looking carefully at that criteria because everyone will be in their own place, right? And so timing may vary depending on where you are
absolutely,
in your process.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and it's ASC 420 for those who want to go to the codification.
All right, there you go. We have our first accounting reference in the morning. So thanks, Matt. Few things actually within that item for companies to think about. You actually gave me a good segue, though, to our next topic because you mentioned income taxes. And I know, Cassie, that there's been a lot of talk about what could happen as people are considering their income tax positions. So can you give companies sort of an overview of the types of things they should be thinking about?
Yeah, so you're right that the withdrawal agreement and any new trade agreements, if and when they're finalized, could result in significant changes to the tax law that applies to companies both in Britain and the EU. So some of the main areas that could be impacted by Brexit include taxes on like rolled over gains from certain types of previous reorganizations, withholding taxes on certain types of dividends that have happened, and even measurement of deferred tax assets and liabilities if there's a tax rate change associated with it. So U.S. GAAP requires that companies account for a change in tax law on the date of enactment. With regard to Brexit, that means that companies shouldn't account for the impacts of the withdrawal until either enacted changes in tax laws or treaties between Britain and the EU or individual EU member states occurs, or Britain actually withdraws from the EU, whichever of those occurs soonest.
So you're saying people don't have to do anything now?
Well, not necessarily. I think in the interim, companies that have had intra-European dealings such as like the dividend distributions or prior restructurings that I mentioned, they might be subject to potentially material deferred income tax effects upon Britain's withdrawal from the EU. And, you know, these things can go back decades, and you're talking about different countries and different entities. You kind of get to dig up the records. And so kind of getting an inventory of those so that you can kind of think about whether you might have a material effect, and providing clear and transparent disclosure about that risk, even if you can't quantify it, I think is what companies should be thinking about doing now.
So, Cassie, I think every time we talk about income taxes, it involves a lot of records, gathering them together, and making sure you have a full inventory of your positions. So this sounds like another one of those situations.
Sure does.
So just to clarify then, if it's all based on the timing of when things actually occur, then that may or may not be March 29th in this situation, depending on what types of agreements are in place and if they're before or really after.
Yeah, so if an agreement gets put in before, then you would account for it before. But if nothing's in place as of March 29th, then effectively, you know, Britain has withdrawn and those existing tax treaties aren't in effect anymore. And so you would have to account for the impact of those tax treaties being null at that point in time.
Okay. And given the fact that that will be 2 days prior to the end of the first quarter for calendar year and companies, definitely makes sense why you're saying people should be thinking about that now.
Absolutely.
Definitely a lot to think about. I guess as I reflect on our first four topics, the thing that's very much highlighted is, given the uncertainty and the fact that different decisions by Britain and the EU could result in a lot of different outcomes for companies, disclosure has to be very key here. And so, Matt, what types of things should companies be thinking about as they look at their disclosures?
Good question, Heather. I mean, I think the biggest concern, and this plays out with a lot of economic situations where there's uncertainty, is under-disclosing the potential risk to your operations or to your financial statements. In fact, the SEC AICPA conference in December, the SEC chairman, Jay Clayton, during one of his introductory sessions, talked about how the SEC was concerned about what had been disclosed thus far by public registrants, and, you know, additional concern about what was going to be disclosed in the year-end financial statements, and wanted to make sure that, you know, we don't under-report the impact of Brexit impact of uncertainty. So one thing to keep in mind, right, for SEC disclosures, particularly as companies are finalizing their 10-Ks, you have to have a section on risk disclosures, known trends and uncertainties, and critical accounting estimates. So when you think about all the things we had talked about previously around supply chain disruption, around regulatory environment changing, around income tax uncertainty, it certainly seems like a good area in your 10-K to talk about what the potential impacts of Brexit are. And one tip to keep in mind is under-reporting is one thing, but also using generic disclosures is another thing that the SEC has commented on before. So again, as you're disclosing the potential risks to your organization, try to keep it entity specific.
Well, and I think that's where, again, even what Cassie was talking about detail and things like that, that's not necessarily something, obviously, for your financial statements, but having gone through the effort to identify all these relationships to determine what should be disclosed or that you're going to need to be accounting for at year end seems particularly critical after I've been listening to you guys this morning.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. And since you bring up financial statements, you know, there are financial statement disclosures required also around fair value. We were talking about valuation earlier, but all of the AICA 20 disclosures in your financial statements do talk about a leveling hierarchy, and you need to think about how potential uncertainty and numerous kind of scenarios that your probability weighting impacts where your leveling is. And, you know, not to say that you've necessarily moved as of year end, but it's something to keep in mind. And that relates to recurring and non-recurring valuations of financial and non-financial assets.
Good. Thank you. And thanks, Chip and Cassie, for joining us today. You've definitely given our listeners a lot to think about as they consider the impact of Brexit on their businesses. And for our listeners, as always, thanks for tuning in. If your interest has been piqued on these topics, please check out our CFO Direct podcast page for more resources on these topics. And also, please check our Brexit page on pwc.com for further resources. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, All Rights Reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.